The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Anyway, there was a preference for doing it this way, so we'll, for this seating arrangement. And I think I'll read just the paragraph again of Seeking Nothing that we had. Seeking Nothing. People of the world are deluded. They are always longing for something, always, in a word, seeking. But the wise wake up. They choose reason over custom. They fix their minds on the sublime and let their bodies change with the seasons. All phenomena are empty. They contain nothing worth desiring. Calamity forever alternates with prosperity. To dwell in the three realms is to dwell in a burning house. To have a body is to suffer. Does anyone with a body know peace? Those who understand this detach themselves from all that exists and stop imagining or seeking anything. The sutras say, to seek is to suffer, to seek nothing is bliss. When you seek nothing, you're on the path. And when you use expression seeking nothing, it's in Dogen there's, from these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. And one thing about non-seeking is you kind of can't hold on to not seeking. Like you can't hold on to letting go. You can only let go. You know, because, and just like, and the letting go is really the, we see, not in the fact that we have all these desires, feelings, and all flow through us constantly, but the way that we make them into something. So it's not, the seeking nothing in a way is those, the way our desires harden, our opinions harden, our heart harden, and this is what we need, this is what we require, this is the way things should be. And in a way, whenever we do that, when we start seeing the world, suddenly the world becomes a reflection of those opinions, those desires, those way of seeking things. You see the world through with the eyes of desire. You see the world with those hard opinions. And actually, you stop seeing much else. Just the same way as when you're really upset with somebody, all you see is what you're upset with. The person can have the endless qualities, and all you're really seeing is, oh, why are they doing that? And being the recipient sometimes of that kind of thing, I think sometimes I don't even realize I'm doing that. You know, if from my point of view, it's not even something I'm aware of. But the other person is seeing it as something important. And one of the things about non-seeking, in a way, is that all of training isn't really what we encounter, but how we relate to what we encounter. In a way, when we practice in Buddhism, what we're doing is we're putting ourselves on a path that, in a way, is we have to have faith is taking us to our true home, to where our heart really wants to go. And then whatever we do on that path has deep meaning and significance, because it's we're going to where we need to go. We're doing what we need to do. And that's why, from a point of view of Buddhist training, whatever you encounter is part of, is your training, is your teaching. I can remember, used to kind of bother me a little bit when I was a young monk, but of course, you would say it sort of with a kind of a a sense that there's a humorous aspect to it, but something bad would go on and you would say, good training to confront the difficulty, the disaster. And in a way, it was good training, because how you respond to it is showing that what's important isn't the fact that suddenly you're doing something difficult or you're feeling something difficult, but the fact that we can embrace it and realize this is the path, this is what matters. And then whatever we're doing then has deep meaning. I remember reading something. There was a scholar who wrote all these books on Chinese Buddhism before the communists and after. And one of the things he always asked monks about was, how did you deal with boredom? Because he would hear about their schedule, their life. And he said, the one thing that never made sense is nobody ever seemed to be bored or ever dealt with boredom. And to him, it was completely incomprehensible. It was like, I don't know how that's, what that means and how's that possible. But actually, it's because, truthfully, training isn't usually boring. It's a lot of other things. Most of you, the only time like meditation gets boring is when you don't put any energy into it and you're just trying not to be there, which is how I went through most of my high school life, I think. and it was very boring, trying not to be where you are. But when you're really where you are, it's not boring. And even when it's boring, it changes very quickly. And whatever you're doing, you're on the path. And that has great meaning. But the path isn't seeking anything specific. You're not demanding to be peaceful, demanding to have this or that, this experience or that experience. In fact, the key thing I know from teaching people is what's important is never what they're experiencing, but how they relate to whatever they experience. That's the key. It's not, wow, this was good, this was bad, they had this spiritual experience, they didn't have this, they're having this feeling, that feeling. The key is always, how are they relating to it? Are they making it part of the path? Or are they just getting caught up in it? Are they making something out of it that's not? Either good or bad, you can make a problem out of something good happening to you and it'll be an obstacle. Or you can make an obstacle out of something bad happening. Rather than realizing everything is a Dharma lesson. Everything is preaching the Dharma when we use it properly. And we can use it in that way. And to see the body, to see how do we find peace, is the thing. And that's why we're, in a way, seeking not to seek. Desiring not to desire in the sense that we're not trying to hold on to it. And that allows us just to be open to what's happening and just to deal with it freely without trying to make anything out of it and realizing it'll all keep changing and there's nothing to hang on to. And part of it in training to actually, really to be not seeking, you actually have to get to know what you're actually holding on to, which is the hard thing in training. And it takes years and years. We all can practice many, many years and realize, God, we've been holding on to something and we weren't aware of it. We were thinking the world should be this way and it was even unconscious. It was just the way we looked at the world. People should be this way. It took me a long time to realize I have this great picture of how I should be. And it took me many years to realize I've never met somebody the way I think I should be. nobody's ever measured up to my standards. I was intelligent enough not to apply my standards to anyone else because that would not be good, but I realized I had this unrealistic standard of myself that then I was always getting depressed about because I was always messing up, rather than just accepting what it is. And part of training is, and I realize, you know, and a good part of training is, in a way, by relating to it, we're learning we don't own all these conditions that are passing through us, whether it's our feelings, our thoughts, our past, our concern about the future, you know, what's happening in the world. We don't own them. They're not our possessions. There was a nice saying one Buddhist teacher I remember here giving, where he said, talking about the mountains of karma we have, mountains are very heavy when you try to carry them. If you just let them be, they don't weigh you down at all. You know, you don't have to be carrying your mountain of karma. You can keep letting go of it and realizing there's nothing going on at the moment. You're not being bound by your past. You don't have to carry your future worries, your concerns. You can just, right now, there's no problem. There's no barrier. Nothing's going on that's creating any difficulty. Even when we think it is, if you just accept it in and just deal with it moment by moment, it is what it is. Just like pain. It's not a problem. It comes, it goes, it's a sensation. You know, you're not being bound by your body, you're not being bound by your past, you're not being bound by your future. All you have to do is just be willing and open and realize the real treasure isn't in any of those conditions, and our real home is not in any of those conditions. And that's why, in a way, I think tomorrow I may do just a talk on no self. Bodhidharma keeps, you know, everything he writes talking about no self, and I realize, oh, I may as well just make that a whole talk. No self, what does that mean? Because from a Buddhist point of view, we're not trying to believe there's no self. That's useless. What we're trying to do is experience no self, which is actually reality. There isn't a self. It's just a collection of karma that we identify with. And that's actually always changing. And you know, and that's why when the Buddha had a nice saying, one of my favorite lines of Dharma, when the Buddha was dying, he said, "Don't worry, in a way, whenever you see the Dharma, you will see me. When you see me, you will see the Dharma." His real body isn't, wow, this person who just had a normal body. You know, his real, what really mattered is the Dharma, which is pointing out reality, which is that his real self wasn't that body. And your real self and his real self aren't really any different. The nice way of putting it in Mahayana Buddhism is always that all of training is seeking the heart of Buddha. And when we let go of all these differences and distinctions, we are all the heart of Buddha. In fact, everywhere you look is the heart of Buddha. There's nothing outside the heart or within the heart. The heart is everything. And we make the problems by then clinging to the pieces. But clinging to the pieces are almost like sticking your hand in the river and thinking when you pull out the water, now I have the river. And the river keeps flowing and you can't hold on to it. And actually, really, as the Buddha said on one of his things, it's like a dewdrop slipping into the shining sea. You know, our real life is the river and we can't, and the river isn't the water because the water keeps flowing, but there's still a river. And anyway, I think I'll go to the next section of Bodhidharma. Practicing the Dharma. The Dharma is a truth that all natures are pure. By this truth, all appearances are empty. Defilement and attachment, subject and object, don't exist. The sutras say The Dharma includes no being because it is free from the impurity of being. The Dharma includes no self because it's free from the impurity of self. Those wise enough to believe and understand these truths are bound to practice according to the Dharma. And since that which is real includes nothing worth begrudging, they give their body, life, and property in charity, without regret, without vanity of giver, gift, and recipient, and without bias and attachment. And to eliminate impurity, they teach others, but without becoming attached to form. Thus, through their own practice, they are able to help others and glorify the way of enlightenment. And as with charity, they also practice the other virtues. But while practicing the six virtues to eliminate delusion, they practice nothing at all. This is what is meant by practicing the Dharma. And in a way, what we're doing in our training is pointing ourselves to these truths. And then actually, when we encounter things, what training involves, instead of allowing your mind to kind of always be saying things that are deluded from a point of view, from a Buddhist teaching, we have to learn to actually give ourselves the Dharma and substitute the Dharma for the fact that, for instance, this person shouldn't be doing this. There's a Dharma that you can apply. This is pure. And even if something's being harmed, nothing's being lost ultimately, you know, or else we can't be free of birth and death. You know, if you feel like there's something to fundamentally be gained and lost, then we'll always be holding on to things. And the truth that things are empty doesn't mean they're empty in the sense they don't exist. They're empty of the meanings we give them. The deep meaning, like, for instance, something is miraculously happening. You know, birth is this wondrous thing and death is this awful thing. Yet the moment you're born, as Bob Dylan said, the Dharma, you're busy dying. You know, that's actually every baby. Look at them. You know, they'll probably, if they're lucky, they'll get to be an old, feeble person. It's all there, implicit, just like it's implicit. You know, the flower in the spring is going to be, you know, the dead, withered plant in a short time. And as Dogen says, you know, we cling to the flowers and push away the weeds. And the real heart isn't, there's something wrong that a flower becomes a thing, unless you feel like I've lost the selfhood of that flower and give it a meaning. But since we don't usually do that, we're willing to, you know, accept the transience of the flower, but not of the person, you know, because something's going to be lost. That being is lost. And, you know, so understanding, you know, what's going on, you know, is kind of very important. You know, in one of the teachings in Buddhism, I always like, it's throughout all of Buddhism, is seeing things with the signs. And there's a nice way of anicca, anatta, and dukkha. And in the Vimalakirti Sutra and a lot of others, I'll put it, you know, that you know, understanding anicca is called signless liberation, that there's nothing solid there to look at. Everything is like the flower. Everything is actually like us. You know, suddenly we're here, and in Buddhism they often use the expression, everything is earth, water, wind, and fire. And that's our body. Earth, the minerals, and the substance, water, air, and fire, which is burning all the stuff that means our body can be 98 degrees. And eventually it's going to just dissolve into the elements. You know, if we allow it to be, we'll just, you know, we'll be the ashes on the altar. A lot of the elements will go up in the air, you know, kind of, and come back again. Just like I like that, always like that scientific fact that everything in your body came from a star that blew up. You know, all heavy elements only are created in this universe by stars blowing up. Otherwise, we wouldn't have any elements. So actually, at one point, we were all just hydrogen, you know, just mostly hydrogen. And if we understand suffering, you know, that's the sign is desire. When we have desire, we let go of desire, we're liberated from suffering, which is the second noble truth. And then when we understand no self, that's the door of liberation through seeing the emptiness, that nothing has a substance. Like, where is the heart of a house? You put all the elements together. Well, where's the self of the house? Is it in the 2x4s? Is it in the roofing? Is it in the furnishing, the sheetrock? Where is the house? And when you take it away, has the space been affected by the house coming and going into it? You know, and did we ever actually own the space? Can you own space? You know, this is a box. You're sitting in a room enclosing emptiness. And can you actually, and it'll dissolve and come back, and the emptiness, the space will not be affected by the coming and going of the house, the building, just like our bodies are. You know, and there is no, you know, where are you in a good, you know, doing that. And then from Buddhism, to tell yourself the Dharma is wherever you look. This is a very teaching in every tradition in Buddhism. Wherever you look, see dukkha. See that there's nothing. Desire will not take you anywhere. You know, see emptiness, no self. Nothing has an inherent identity. It's all like houses. They come up, they go down. Like bodies, they come up, they dissolve. The elements come back together again. They dissolve. It's like everything in the universe is coming together and falling apart constantly. And, you know, and if you see, so what, one way of giving yourself the Dharma is when you see that there's nothing solid, whatever's going on, whatever problem, whatever thing is there is. Wherever you look, see that nothing actually works in the sense you can grasp it. That's where the emptiness comes. You can't grasp anything. Try to grasp happiness. It doesn't work too well. If we did, we'd all be happy. You can grasp suffering a little easier. You can maintain suffering somehow. Most of us, it takes energy. It's like the energy, but it's like, for instance, it's hard to even stay angry. It takes energy. You ever felt like, oh, I'll never get over this, and you got so exhausted, you finally gave up at being angry at the being. And but when the Buddha said, you see me, you see the Dharma, the place you're going to find the Dharma in isn't actually by analyzing the world. It's by analyzing what makes you, you know. When desire arises in you, that's the Dharma, how you do it. How you relate to whatever's going on is the Dharma. Because that's what happiness and suffering are coming from you. They're not coming from the outside. As much as the great delusion that will stop you from making progress in training is thinking the difficulties are outside your own hearts and minds. The whole world that you're going to experience is in your hearts and minds, because that's the only world you know. You know, there's no reality. You know, you don't have any reality out of this consciousness. And the funny thing about our consciousness is we think everyone is seeing the same things, but all you have to do is talk to people. It's one of the things you take refuge in, and you realize people are seeing different things. I was with my family a while back and going over some memories, and I realized we all saw it completely different. We're all living in a different past, you know, and probably had a different present. And and it all had different meanings to us. And the thing that creates the world is the meanings that we give to what we encounter, you know. And, you know, and that's where we find the Dharma, you know. It's in our hearts and minds. That's where you apply it. And you practice the Dharma by seeing what you're telling yourself all the time, you know. And I always kind of, people will sometimes be surprised when I say, well, that's delusion. And they'll say, I'm deluded. And I think, have they ever listened to what goes through their mind? You know, just think of if you had to do a computer printout of all your thoughts that came through in a day. How much of it would have been the Dharma? And how much would have been really junk or delusion in a way? You know, like, oh, God, this shouldn't be happening. I need that, you know. You know, even the daydreams, the stuff, how you spin the wheels, you know, all the little stuff. And, of course, that's the reality to you. And it's even why, you know, you come, you know, you start practicing and it's, okay, you sit down to meditate and it's interesting what's going, you know. And it's even like people even say, I can't meditate, you know. And I'll say, it's not that you can't meditate, you don't like it, you know, which is different than you can't meditate. Anybody can bring their mind back. Just bring their mind back. Just bring their mind back. And you're not just bringing your mind back. You're bringing your mind back to trying to see the world with the eyes of a Buddha. What would the Buddha do? What does a Buddha see? You know, what is reality? Because it's just the same way most of us can often give other people fairly good advice when they confront problems. And it's amazing when we hit the same problems, we have trouble taking the same advice. You can tell somebody, you'll get over this, but you'll be in the problem. And you'll be thinking, no, I'm not going to get over this. You know, even though a lifetime of experience should tell us, you're going to get over this. But when you're really experiencing something, it's so very hard to feel like you'll get over it. Or that it'll just fade away and just be as it is, just a dream. You know, a dream of suffering when you look back at it. And the whole idea is, by pointing ourselves to the truth and practicing the Dharma, we're freeing ourselves from really this dream of birth and death. And like Bodhidharma says in this, that those who aren't being bound, you know, those wise enough to believe and understand these truths are bound to practice according to the Dharma. And since that which is real includes nothing worth begrudging, they give their body, life, and property in charity without regret, without vanity of giver, gift, or recipient, and without bias or attachment. If you're not clinging to something, then you just will do what is needed in the moment, what's good to do, without kind of thinking you're doing something. Any more than if a mother has a child that's sick, she doesn't feel like, wow, I'm doing something exceptional, taking care of the child. You're just doing what's needed to be done, and that's what training is. And you're actually not thinking you're doing anything. Often when you're really in harmony with the way, it doesn't feel like you're doing anything. I mostly notice I'm doing something when I don't want to do it. You know, when there's resistance, it's like, oh, I have to be doing this. And that's just the self coming up. And then I feel like I'm doing something. When I'm actually really, when things just appear, the self is in an ascendancy. It's not like I feel like, wow, this is, wow, I'm being good, you know, or I'm giving something. You know, sometimes, for instance, sometimes when you see a real need, it actually feels like most of us have had the experience where it felt much better to give a gift than to get a gift. Because, you know, and it's not because, wow, I'm being so good. It actually felt better to give than to take. And it's not You know, and that's just an aspect of just getting the self out of the way where you see a need. And it's very satisfying to do that gift. You know. Let's see. And one thing about practicing the Dharma is that actually for all of us, there's aspects of the Dharma, the practice, things that we're really almost already in harmony with. You know, things that we find an immediate help, that we can immediately take to heart and do. The hard thing about training is that a lot of the Dharma and the teaching we find indigestible. You know, we don't want to take it to heart. You know, we find it hard to swallow. When we confront things, it kind of isn't there because we don't really want to take it to heart. And, you know, and this is what training is about, is we have to work at taking to heart all these pieces that we don't seem to want to digest, swallow. You know, a good example of it is, and people really do find that hard to swallow, is the most basic teaching in Buddhism. Suffering exists, or suffering, you know, exists and is really unavoidable. And suffering's due to attachment, due to desire. You let go of that, there's no suffering. So whenever you suffer, give yourself the Dharma. It's not out there. There is no suffering. You know, that was the title of a nice book, a title of one of those, a lot of Buddhist books have titles that are just, are good Dharma teachings just in the title. And that was the title of the wonderful Chinese master, Chan master, Sheng Yan, on his commentary on Scripture of Great Wisdom. There is no suffering. All of suffering just comes out of wrong view. You're saying you want this and not that. And people can be in the worst circumstances and not suffer. Many of you have heard, but you know, I often like quoting people in concentration camps. You know, and my favorite one was somebody was in a concentration camp and he saw one man who looked completely at peace and actually happy. And he thought for a while, this guy must be mentally ill. There's something wrong. How could anyone be happy in this hell? And he got to be around the person, and the person actually was seeing everything. He could see that the fellow wasn't spaced out, wasn't detached from things, but wasn't disturbed, you know, was still okay, was at peace with what was going on. And he came up to the person, and the person said, "This is just suffering. There is always suffering. But if you really look in your heart, you can find a joy that no condition, no circumstance, nothing can ever alter, change, or damage. And you can be in touch with that and find joy wherever you are." And the fellow who was in the concentration camp, and those who have read the book, is Then There Was Light. This was the one who wrote, and then there was, like, Jacques Lucerin was the one who was meeting this man, you know. And he said, "After a while, I could see with the eyes of this man, Jeremy, and I could see that there was no suffering." And I've actually met people in a lot of really difficult situations, people being in tremendous pain, you know, as much pain that any more painkiller would kill them. And they actually weren't suffering. You could just look at their face and they would say, you know, I'm fine. You know, I'm not this body. I'm not this karma. Nothing's really going on here. And in a way they knew that there was nothing to fear. And that's a place we all want to find. And to do that, we have to point ourselves to the Dharma and realize that we can solve everything in our own hearts. All the suffering is right there. It's what we're holding on and pushing away. You know, doesn't mean it feels good. It's like suffering doesn't mean you want the pain. Just like the fellows in the concentration camp. We're doing all they could to help everyone in the concentration camp. But you don't have to suffer. You know, I was driving behind somebody in Berkeley. It's one of the nice things about being Berkeley. Bumper sticker, suffering is optional. And I thought, I'll have to keep that in mind. And one way we free ourselves from suffering is that we have to realize that, in a way, if we want to get caught, you know, often the Buddhist term for this world is samsara, the world that can't fully satisfy, the world where you can't express suffering, where the defilements of the passions actually drive things. And the only way you can actually open your really train is by freeing yourself from thinking where happiness lies is in grasping everything in this world of samsara. Because as long as you follow those desires, you can't be free. And really, when we can't have compassion for other beings and free ourselves from things, when we actually think that that's where the real happiness lies. We can have compassion for the self, pointing ourselves and realize again we're getting caught up in this desire. It's normal life. But then when we actually try to free ourselves from it, then we actually have compassion for the fact that, wow, all these people around ourselves are really having a hard time letting go of desire. You know, and that's all the suffering in the world comes from. People really trying to make themselves happy in the wrong way, you know, and wholeheartedly doing it with great energy. I mean, the world's full of people putting amazing energy into things that are so empty. I remember just not long ago I watched a documentary, just a brief news thing about a fellow who actually spends all his time with the world's largest collection of oil cans. And he built a whole building to house his oil cans. And each time he gets a new one, he has to shift. You know, because they're alphabetical, he often has to shift a lot of oil cans. It sounds funny, but is any collecting any different? I mean, think about it. You think, well, this is nicer to have than oil cans. Why? You know, it's just something you decided to get caught up in. You know, thinking having this stuff it is going to somehow fill some need or have some importance. Anyway, I think I'll make that the talk for today. And anyway, tomorrow I think I'll talk about no self, just, you know, because every section I read has a whole thing on no self. And I just realized I could make that a talk, because it's actually, in some ways, not a hard concept to understand, but it's often taken wrong by, and a good way of looking at it is, I remember reading one Buddhist teacher who put it very nicely. He says, everyone's asking the wrong question. They are asking, who am I, rather than, what do I view as making up me? Which is a whole different question. When we say who we are, what exactly does that mean? What am I holding on to as making up the self? And then we can actually start dissolving it rather than this vague question that already assumes that there's something there to hold on to. Anyway, homage to all the Buddhas in all the worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all the worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.